Accession number 18802, Reel 6.
Brigadier Cowan, Reel 6. I think you were saying that the main threat was from thieving rather than of violence or...
That was certainly our impression, yes. And when I say impression, I mean the thieving was a definite threat, and I don't recall any other.
Did you lose anything personally?
Yes, I lost a cigarette case, which I was asleep, and it was on a table beside my bed, and it had gone in the morning.
Was that when you were in camp or in a hotel? Or?
I think it was in a barracks, if I remember correctly. It just happened.
And I think you were saying also that on one occasion you were actually threatened.
Yes, that was in Alexandria, with a sort of penknife. But the chap pushed off quite quickly.
And how did you react when? I mean, what do you know? What he wanted? Was he trying to rob you, or just?
Well, I think he wanted money.
He wanted money.
Yeah. I think I gave him 5 piastres or something, and he pushed off. I was frightened.
I mean, was this in a crowded area, or were you on your own, or what?
No, it was in a perfectly open part of Alexandria, but it just so happens there was nobody else around at the time. I mean, there were people over there, but nobody nearby.
Mm. What sort of fellow was he? Do you remember
rough
about him?
Rough. I mean, he was just out to get what he could. Mm. He was successful with me.
Mm. I mean, do you know of any other cases of that sort of thing happening?
No. But I'm sure they did. Mm. But I just never got to hear of them.
Mm. What was your main work as adjutant?
Well, chief of staff, commanding officer, responsible for virtually all the paperwork in the battalion, mm. responsible for discipline, responsible for operation orders if there were any and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Responsible for officers. I mean, you could almost recite ad nauseam the sort of jobs an adjutant has to do. He's a maid of all work, but make the battalion tick.
What was the commanding officer a demanding CO?
No, he was a very nice man indeed. He became very well known in later life. Vivian Street, his name was. He became a divisional commander and then died rather young. Horses were his passion, and so he spent a good deal of time with horses and left me to get on with it, which was very satisfactory.
And did you find that your whole day was filled up with
yes,
work?
Yes. But of course, one tended in the climate there, one tended to start early in the morning, work till lunchtime, have a light lunch, probably have 2 or 3 hours off in the afternoon, and then work again in the evening.
You mentioned operation orders. What sort of operation orders were you issuing?
Well, I mean, to move, it's a rather grand word, I suppose, for moving a company from A to B and making all the administrative arrangements and so on.
Was there much moving about, or did the companies generally remain in place?
The areas remained in place, but the companies tended to change over so as to give them a change and also to make sure they didn't get stale.
A rotation?
Yes.
How long would you leave a company in a position before you would consider it necessary to move them out, to stir them up a bit?
I honestly can't remember what we actually did, but I would have thought 3 or 4 weeks was probably about it.
Were
but in fact, the battalion didn't last all that much longer because it came up for disbandment.
Were the companies able to do any training as well as their guard duties?
Yes, limited. I mean, there was certainly no great sort of battle training or anything like that, but yes, musketry and what I call the basic skills. Yes.
Now, you mentioned also you were concerned with discipline. What was the discipline like?
Pretty good on the whole. I don't recall, I mean, in any organisation you'll always find somebody who misbehaves for some reason or other, doesn't come back from his leave or gets drunk or does something or other. But I don't remember it being a problem, and I don't remember it being more than you'd expect anywhere else.
What about the officers? I mean, what you said you had to deal with officers in business.
Well, one is responsible as adjutant for sort of keeping a check of officer duties, officers going on leave, officer training, and that sort of thing.
So it's assigning the duty officer.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
Do you remember there being any incidents of any sort, any note, during this period?
No, I don't.
Just a quiet spell of garrison duty.
Yes, I mean, garrison is exactly what it was all about, really. But you see, we're now talking of 1945-46, and not 1956, when things were quite different.
Now, you were saying that the battalion didn't last very long because it came up for disbandment. I mean, had you known about that prospect when you went out there, or did that come as a surprise?
I certainly hadn't known about it in terms of a date, but I think all of us had assumed that the army would run down in course of time. I don't think any of us had given any thought as to how quickly it might happen. But even if it was only for a short time, I still reckon it was worth going to get the adjutant experience.
Yes.
Having said that, whether I'd have made more contacts and things by going to Washington, I don't know. And there's no good looking backwards.
Oh, well, I mean, there are differences between a diplomatic career and a military career.
Yeah.
How was the process of disbandment carried out?
Well, it was, I suppose, mainly up to me to organise, and we just ran down quietly and slowly in as orderly a manner as possible until we were left eventually. I can't remember how we finally disposed of the final little party, but we had enough people left, as it were, to tidy everything up and clean the camp we'd been in and so on.
And this business was actually done in Egypt?
It was all done in Egypt, yes. Mm. And indeed, one of the main jobs, a lot of the soldiers were going home to England to be released.
Their time expired.
Yes, the great majority of them were wartime soldiers and were going home and duly grateful for it. One or two of the officers were doing that, but most of the officers, in fact, were not due for release. Mm. And so they needed to be placed in something or other, and so a lot of trouble was taken to place them in various parts of the Middle East. Mm. I mean, I myself went to GHQ Middle East. Yeah. Others went to Headquarters British Troops Egypt, Cairo Garrison, Cairo District, Palestine. I mean, we were all round about the place.
How long did it take, the actual process of dissolving the battalion into its component parts and sending them off?
I'd have to refresh my memory from some document at the time, but I guess probably about 6 weeks, I would think. Something of that sort.
And have you any idea of roughly what proportion of the battalion simply went home to be made into civilians again?
Well, as I say, the great majority of the soldiers. I mean, a few NCOs stayed in the Middle East, and they also were placed. But the great bulk of the battalion went home.
Did they go home all in one go, or did they go in drafts?
In drafts. Well, in driblets, I suppose, would be the right way of describing it.
What happened to their duties, their guard duties in Portside and Ismailia?
We handed over to somebody else.
You were relieved before disbandment?
Yes.
So, I mean, was the battalion actually physically concentrated in one camp for this process of a dissolution, or did they remain in their company locations to be run down?
I can't remember. I suspect that some of the running down took place in the company locations, and that as they had thinned down, so some of the residual bits came into battalion headquarters. I ought to remember that in great detail, but I don't.
And did you do most of the work involved, or did you get help?
It's essentially something that has to be done in the battalion. I mean,
yes.
Obviously people from outside help with postings, they help with advice, etc., etc. But it's essentially something within the battalion. It's essentially something for the adjutant to do.
Right. So it's
and his staff, of course.
Yes. Who did you have on your staff? What sort of?
Well, there's an orderly room quartermaster sergeant, an orderly room sergeant.
Yes.
And, you know, four or five clerks.
Yeah. And was that an adequate
yes.
staff to do the
yes.
job?
Yes. Mm. Like, we worked very hard, but yes.
Who were you liaising with for postings? Was this a branch at GHQ Middle East?
Yes. It so happened that the gentleman who was the Major General Administration Middle East was a rifleman. Mm. It so happened that the military secretary representative at Headquarters British Troops Egypt was a rifleman, and it so happens there was somebody at GHQ otherwise as a rifleman. Anyway, we had our contacts, and I made contact personally with General Reeve, who is the MGA, and, you know, took his advice as to how the best way of doing this, and we managed to place everybody pretty well, actually.
What
in fact, it was reckoned that the Black Mafia had taken over the Middle East, which is about true.
Did the officers who remained, did they have an opportunity to express a preference where they would wanted to go? I mean, were you able to take account of their personal inclinations, or did they simply get sent where it was convenient or necessary to have them?
By and large, we went where we were told to go, but they were all pretty satisfactory postings. They all, although they were good jobs and hard work and so on, but they all had a certain amount of glamour attached to them and a certain amount of leisure in happy places and so on. I think if somebody said, I particularly want to go to Palestine, he would have gone to Palestine, but most of us stayed in Egypt.
I mean, did officers have strong preferences for where they wanted to go?
No.
What they wanted to do?
No. I mean, to be honest, what we really wanted was to have a job.
Mm. Now, I think you decided, hadn't you, that you wanted to stay in the army?
Yes.
But can you remember when it was you made that decision that you wanted to make a military career? And what your reasons were?
Oh, sometime in Italy. I think I thought I liked the army. The army seemed to like me. I liked everything that the regimental system in the green jacket stood for. I liked its training systems. I liked the way responsibility was handed down. I liked the way that the officers and the soldiers reacted with each other. And generally, I thought this was a good life. And I remember my grandfather was, I think, still alive then. And I'd been expected to go into the family business, papermaking, and I announced I wanted to stay in the army. He gave it his blessing. My mother, who was sad in many ways, but she gave it her blessing. And I got on with it. And I think I've jotted down somewhere where my regular commission was actually produced. But I may have... Yes, regular commission, 9th of November 1945.
I mean, had you been invited... to remain in the army in any formal or informal way, or had you received any advice about your future prospects? Or was this just purely you doing it on your own initiative?
It was largely me, and there were one or two others felt the same as well. And having let our wishes be known, we were then told whether we were sort of persona grata or not. And it just so happens that being a rather old-fashioned lot in some ways, although a forward-looking lot in other ways, in order to have a regular commission in the Rifle Brigade, you had to go onto the Duke's list. The Duke being the Duke of Connaught, who was still Colonel-in-Chief when I first joined,
yes,
and become so in 1880, I think it was. And so, you know, it was a great honour to be on the Duke's list. But anyway, it all sort of went from there, and I became a regular officer, and with no regrets.
And I think your own posting, because you were saying you went off to GHQ, Middle East.
Yes.
Had you decided on that yourself, or had that been decided by the military secretary?
It was decided by the system.
Yes.
I was just posted to this particular job.
What job was that? What were you doing at GHQ Middle East?
What's called GSO3 Staff Duties, under a splendid gunner called John Lockwood, who was my G2, who seemed to know a lot about everything. And I was extremely well trained from the very bottom as a staff officer, but in staff duties is the thing that I suppose is the nuts and bolts of everything in the army. And I really did learn my business as a staff officer, admittedly not for very long, but it stood me in good stead ever afterwards.
So, I mean, could you give a rough description of what you actually did? What sort of functions you carried out as
organization, movements, equipment. I think those are about the three main things. That keeps you quite busy.
Did you have a standard routine working day?
Well, rather as I described before, you tended to start early,
yes,
go on till, say, late lunch, and then a break, and then work in the evening. No, broadly speaking, you worked so long as there was a job to do, and I like it that way.
And was there a sort of steady flow of work for you as G3 in that,
yes,
branch?
Yes.
What was going on at the time when you were serving as GSO3? Was it the process of rundown and disbandment mainly? Or?
Yes. You see, not being on the operational side and not being on the political side, I never really became aware as to what jockeying for position there might be going on as between one headquarters and another. I mean, for instance, was there still to be a headquarters Middle East?
Yeah.
Was there still to be a headquarters British Troops Egypt? Was there really a need for both of them? And I suspect the answer was no, there wasn't. Now, when BTE disappeared, I don't remember. Certainly long after my time. But I mean, when you think that there was a 4-star headquarters, a 3-star headquarters, a 2-star headquarters, and a 1-star headquarters, all in Cairo, it's a bit much.
It does appear that you might have been able to cut out one or two.
I would have thought so. But how it all happened, it was way over my head.
But you were at the most senior headquarters, weren't you?
Yes.
So HQ Middle East, because you would have troops also in Palestine, presumably.
Yes.
Did that go beyond Palestine into Transjordan?
I think it must have done. I never got involved then, but I suspect that was on the operational side, probably, rather than the staff duties side.
Yes.
As happened to me later on in the War Office, when I indeed did have responsibilities in the Middle East.
And did you find that you worked mainly on your own, or were you often required to work collectively via meetings and conferences?
No, I think my I worked in the same room as my boss.
Yes.
And I think he did all... I mean, he was much more experienced than me, although only a few years older, much more experienced. And I suspect he did all the sort of interesting stuff and gave me the gubbins to do.
You were given the routine.
Yeah, which is a perfectly reasonable attitude.
And what did it mainly consist of, drawing up orders?
Whether it's... I think I'd put it more aptly as shifting paper.
Yes.
Now, what all the paper was, I haven't the remotest idea. But it was all to do with the general organisation, movement, equipment, and so on.
So did I mean, as I understand it, before anything can happen, a movement, for example, or an issue of equipment or something of that sort, it has to be cleared by staff duties.
Yes.
In order to make sure that people don't get in each other's way.
Exactly.
That there's coordination.
Yeah.
So it's a sort of general clearinghouse for all the other staff functions.
I think that's a pretty fair way of putting it.
Yeah.
And then the quartermaster side, quartermaster general side, would get on with actually issuing the stuff, and the movement staff would get on with the actual movements, but the authority was given by staff duties.
Yeah, so in effect, you might have pieces of paper arriving on your desk, and if the activities proposed to them could be fitted together, they would get your imprimatur or rubber stamp, and then they would be disseminated to those concerned with action, and it would all happen.
Yes.
So. Now, this seems
I mean, I think that's putting it in a very ritzy way. I don't remember it being quite as smart as that.
Yeah. Well, it does seem to me that...
That's roughly right.
Yes, it is a sort of coordination activity.
And certainly, I mean, if I apply the thought you've just expressed to my life when I was in the MOD, also yes. in staff duties, that very much so is exactly the case. I mean, enormous coordinating role right across the board.
Mm. And were there ever times when it was possible that you might be swamped, you know, and have too much coming in?
Don't remember it.
No. You were always able to cope.
But, you know, I was young and enthusiastic, I don't think. Overwork never worried me.
Mm. How many of you were there in the G3 section? You mentioned your boss and you were working in the section.
Well, just two of us. I mean, he was the G2 and I was...
Yes.
And I use these in the old-fashioned sense, not
yes.
in the way of G1, G2, G3, G4 as you get it now in the staff side.
Yes.
I mean, this is a general staff officer grade 3.
Yeah.
And I worked with a general staff officer grade 2, and he had a boss above him
yes.
who was a grade 1, and there was a brigadier above him, you know, mm-hmm. so it went on up the mm-hmm. chain. But I worked directly with this major, and, you know, I did whatever he asked me to do.
Mm. What about staff under you, you know, to actually handle the physical business of dealing with the paper? Did you have a body of clerks to...
There must have been a clerical setup, but I absolutely have no idea what it was,
mm-hmm.
nor do I know if it was... I should suspect it was probably a group to serve all the various people in SD rather than
yes.
individual sections.
Mm-hmm. And did you have a record-keeping function as well?
I should think quite probably, but I don't recall it.
Mm-hmm. To revert back to earlier on, when you were in the battalion, do you remember who it was who actually had to maintain and update the war diary?
Yes, it was the IO job.
So you had to do
and
that.
And a bloody awful job I made of it, too.
Why was that?
I think partly, but occasionally one got a bit left behind. You know, a night went by when you didn't do it. Well, that's disaster to start with. And then I think, if you take the Battle of Tosignano as an example, I said just now, I was not in the commanding officer's mind.
Mm.
I could no doubt write down a few map references to where various companies had spent the night and so on, but if you ask me to describe the battle, there's nothing in the war diary at all.
Mm.
And that's very sad. Mm. And that's, when you get down to it, it's my fault.
Well, was that because you were not informed?
I was overtaken by events.
And you were too busy?
Partly that, and partly I just didn't know.
Mm.
And it's very sad.
Mm. But if a night did go by when you hadn't been able to actually take notes, as it were, how could you go about trying to get some idea of what had occurred?
I suppose, really, just by talking to people. But
I mean, did they normally send in after action reports?
Yes.
So presumably you had information that could be extracted and correlated from those.
Yes.
So you said it was only a short experience at GHQ, Middle East. So you seem to have been really going through a series of rapid stages, you know, which were giving you experience of administration and staff work at various levels, at the basic unit level, and then sudden leap up to GHQ level. I mean, did you notice any difference in the character?
Oh, yes. I mean, utterly different. But if you ask me to explain in detail why it was different, I think I would just have to say it's obvious. Mm. You know, if a battalion level's one thing and a theatre level's another thing, and lots of other things in between.
Instead of moving around companies, you're moving around corps. And
yes, I wasn't, in fact, in the business of sort of operational moves of that sort at all. I was much more in the business of peacetime organisation, really.
And was there a major reorganisation going on at the time as a result of at the end of active operations and the rundown?
I think there must have been, but it didn't come my way. Mm.
So what kind of organisation was it that you were coping with?
Sort of local domestic organisation and, you know, establishments and things like that.
Within the whole theatre?
Yes, but on a unit basis within the theatre.
So were there major changes being made to the establishments of battalions, brigades, divisions and so on?
I don't recall major changes, but inevitably there were always some changes, and they all had to go through the system.
Yeah. What was there to do when you weren't actually working?
Tennis, hockey. I lived with three others in a very comfortable flat in Gezira Island, and we were very well looked after. We had a very happy life. We belonged to the Gezira Club. As I say, we played tennis and hockey probably every day. Certainly tennis every day, and probably hockey four times a week, which happened to be my game. I mean, you could have played cricket or all sorts of other things, but I chose hockey. And, you know, that was one way of keeping reasonably fit.
What about the state of health, generally? Was the army in good health?
My recollection is yes. I don't remember it being a problem.
No particular hazards?
I mean, in Egypt, there are always hazards with water, mainly, I suppose, and a disease called Bilharzia, which you've probably come across in speech. I don't remember any of us actually suffering from it or other things because we were careful and did what we were supposed to do from a medical and sanitary point of view. One or two people did get jippy tummy,
yes,
but that was usually when they'd eaten something silly and it lasted 3 days or whatever, and then you were all right again. But I don't remember anything serious.
I think your next move was to an academic establishment.
Yes, I can't remember why I got posted to that. Again, it was the Black Mafia in operation, because there was a gentleman called Hugh Watts, who was the adjutant there, and he needed to go, and they needed a replacement. And there was a Coldstream Guards lieutenant colonel commanding the thing. He seemed quite happy to have a green jacket with him. And so the green jackets were asked to produce a replacement, and I got it.
So you went to Oxford.
So I went to Oxford in January 1946, was it? I think it must have been... January 47. Yes, that's right, January 47. And it was a funny setup. First of all, a lot of my chums from the various battalions and people I met during the war had all arrived back there to do their education. And the last thing they wanted to do was to be connected with the officers' training corps. They wanted to catch up with their education. And so we were in the ridiculous position of a really quite well established unit, because it had a cavalry unit with some armored cars, it had a gunner unit with some 25 pounders, it had a signals unit with some appropriate radio sets, and it had an infantry unit which the adjutant looked after when the adjutant was an infantryman. And a lieutenant colonel commanding, a regimental sergeant major, and company sergeant majors in all these other units, and an officer in all those other units. I mean, it was a ritzy sort of setup. But it was supposed to be looking after, I don't know, 400 or 500 university cadets. Well, they didn't exist because they were all ex-service, or all the ones who might have been interested were. And we actually had two cadets who genuinely joined as undergraduates. And so somebody in